who's kind of backslid and went to a Gideon. His walk with the Lord is so good that when he falls away, he goes to Gideon. That's pretty close to the Lord. Okay, so we got our markers. So again, this is going to be drilled into your heads if it isn't already. Sire starts out with the Christian worldview as the dominant worldview of Western civilization. And because of that, it gives us great confidence in human reason. Unfortunately, that was the founding of modern science because a rational God created us in his image, so we're rational beings. And he created the world in a way that makes sense so that we can really find out truth about the world in which we live. So Johannes Kepler and Blaise Pascal, Rene Descartes and Galileo, all these guys were Bible-believing Christians. And they founded modern science. But eventually we got too much confidence in reason. And so you had Rene Descartes trying to defend Christianity. But, this is, geometry was really big, and the axioms of geometry and confidence in reason to where they became like ultra-rationalist, where maybe we could deduce all truth from a rational point of certainty, like the geometric proofs, the axioms of geometry. And so he thought, well, gee, let me try to use skepticism as a method to find truth, and I'm going to doubt everything until I can find something that I just can't doubt. And so Rene Descartes, the French mathematician, he began to doubt his senses, he began to doubt this, began to doubt that, but the more he doubted, the more he became aware of the fact that he was doubting. And since doubting is a form of thinking, he said, I think, therefore I am. Okay? And Thomas Aquinas, 400 years earlier, he would say, no, you got to start in existence if you want to end in existence. Don't jump to the world. Don't leave the realm of existence and jump into the world of ideas like Plato did. You'll never get back to the physical world. And so Aquinas would say, well, I think because I'm a thinking being. Okay? So thinking beings think. With Descartes, it's like he starts with thinking, and then he argues the existence of the thinker. But whatever the case, just what he's trying to do, as much as, to even use the ontological argument to prove God's existence and all, as much good as he's trying to do, this guy is asking for way too much. As a professing Christian, a Roman Catholic, he's asking for way too much from human reason. Because mankind has fallen. We can still add 1 + 1 and come up with 2. But sometimes we add 1 + 1 and we come up with 3 and get it wrong. So this idea that we're unbiased, rational individuals just seeking truth in the world. I mean, Blaise Pascal people slam him for being an irrationalist when he wasn't. He had a high view of reason. But he understood that Descartes' view of reason was way too high. And so he even said, if we could prove everything through reason alone, what need then is there for revelation from God? So he's telling he's telling Rene Descartes, you're going too far on this one. You're actually trying to prove God. You're going to create a revelation-less religion. A religion where God doesn't have to reveal anything to us because we can figure it all out ourselves. And so Blaise Pascal is actually predicting modernism. That if your views get popular in A. Descartes, we're going to eventually think that reason is all we need to steer our ship. We don't need to humbly depend upon God. And so, but Rene Descartes would say yes. Pascal would say yes. Descartes is correct. Man is a rational being, but he's wrong. Man is not a rational being, period. Man is a rational being, comma. a lot more to a man than just reason. So Blaise Pascal would say, most of the views that we hold to, even very important views like our views on whether God exists or not, things of that sort, most of our views, we arrive at those views, or we arrived at them with something other than reason. Maybe it was our will, maybe it was our emotions, our desires. And then what we do, we just sneak reason in the back door to defend what we already believed on less than rational grounds. And he was more honest about man being formed. It wasn't so much he had a low view of reason. He had very little confidence in fallen man's ability to use reason in an honest manner. Okay? And so whatever the case, he thought, you know, with Descartes, he's going too far on this. Well, with this pumped up idea on human reason, that eventually led to, you know, modernism. We'll just put modernism here. The idea that we can find all truth. It's also called enlightenment rationalism. We can find all truth and solve all problems through human reason alone. We don't need revelation from God, okay? And so you start out here with the unbiased, rational individual finding truth in the world. Well, that led to deism, because we got so overconfident. We were finding that so many things that we thought had supernatural causes, we were finding out the natural causes for, you know, things like earthquakes and thunder and lightning and, you know, whatever. So it's like, well, wait a minute, these things have natural explanations. You know, we don't have to explain a comet in the sky as some type of divine miracle. And so that led to the idea that, you know, given enough time, human reason will find the natural cause for everything. And so then it's kind of like, okay, well then, we still believe in God, but no miracles. And that's what deism says, that God created the universe, but then he leaves it alone. Okay? And so that's what we're going to talk about tonight, is deism. Now eventually, a God that doesn't perform miracles, okay, eventually that's going to lead to naturalism, no supernatural realms, pretty much atheism, no God. So there's really no practical difference between an irrelevant God and no God at all. Okay? And, but then we're going to see naturalism is going to lead, you know, you get some really confident atheists, the secular humanist, or the Marxist, and they think they're going to save the, yeah, God doesn't exist, but man, don't worry, through human reason, man will save the planet. Well, the modernist project failed, and the last stage of modernism was existentialism, but what happened was you had nihilism, where if there's no God, there's no meaning, no truth, no morality, no reason to live. Okay? But man can't stay there. You know, the philosophers that are nihilists say that the only question philosophy has to answer is why not suicide? And so the existentialist then is the last stage. Oops. The existentialist is the last stage of modernism, where you still have the individual, okay, but now it's the non-rational individual. Because they realize if there's no God, there's no truth, no meaning, no morality. So now all you got left is the individual without reason, without truth, without morality. So the existentialist says, well, then through an act of the will, a leap of blind faith into the non-rational realm, we self-actualize ourselves. We create meaning for our life. There's no God to fill out the check and define us who human beings are. We're free to define ourselves. And so you get Jean-Paul Sartre. And, yeah.
Where does Where does naturalism fall in between modernism with the rational individual and existentialism with the non-rational? Does naturalism...
Well, modernism really is carrying you... Modernism starts, I believe, with René Descartes.
Okay.
That ultra-rationalism, and it's continuing here, but then it hits a real bump in the road.
Gotcha.
With this, but to try to recover from that bump in the road, it goes to here, okay? So that's why I would say that existentialism is the last, I would call that, it would probably be some philosophers would disagree with me, I would call that the last stage of modernism. Because you only got one thing left for modernism, it's the individual. But it's no longer the individual with his reason trying to find truth in the world. Now it's the individual with just their will. All that's left is an act of the will. And if you don't want to just contemplate why not suicide, then create meaning for your life. So Jean-Paul Sartre would say, it doesn't matter whether you help an elderly lady across the street or mug her and steal her groceries, as long as you actualize yourself and gave your life meaning. Now, I'm sure the elderly lady would disagree with that, but now, once the individual is gone, if I can keep it straight line here, then you end up with postmodernism, because now there's no individual. Okay? So now, by the way, Friedrich Nietzsche, he said, look, if God is dead, truth is dead, morality is dead, meaning is dead, okay? But then he wants to create the Superman, what, through reason? No, reason is dead, so it's the Supermen create their own hard values rather than the soft values of Christianity through their will to power. So some would see Nietzsche as a nihilist, others would see him because he wants the Superman to come about by a will to power as the existentialist, but they're going to create their own narrative, their own fairy tale story, their own myth to fill the void left by a rejected Christianity. So some would see him as a father of postmodernism. Okay? But with postmodernism, we have no individual, because the individual is defined by their community's narrative. It's funny, I went through this whole thing today in class, an Old Testament history and literature course, and it was all because we were going over Ecclesiastes. We're in about 930 BC by Solomon, and he says that everything is without meaning. Everything is meaningless, striving after the wind under the sun. You take God out of the equation, nothing makes sense. Now his conclusion is, in the end, fear God and obey his commands. I mean, big building projects. You could build a temple, one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, and it's meaningless. It's going to come down if there's no God. But if God exists, then even our thoughts, according to Solomon, take on eternal consequences, eternal value. And so what happens here is individual loss. Now, give me a show of hands. How many people here have seen the Truman Show?
Isn't that where he's stuck in the bubble?
In the cloud? Is he rocking the cloud?
What's that? But he thinks it's the real world.
Yeah.
Everybody else are actors, and it's a live TV show. And what's the producer's name? Ed Harris. What's his name? Gotta watch movies closer, guys. Kristoff.
Ooh.
Okay, so right there you got to think, all right, wait a minute here. And by the way, Truman, he's the true man. This is the truth. The story is about, it's not about one guy, it's about mankind. And we got this pie in the sky Christ character who's created this make-believe world, this myth for the true man to live in, is he going to be able to rise above that and come out of it? So there's a sense. Now Christoph rhymes with something that we can't repeat on the video. Somebody's really angry, okay? Oh. It rhymes with Christoph, okay? So it's kind of like the guy seems to be portraying traditional religion, you know, Christ, as being very angry, a big cosmic killjoy. But I like the way they did it. It's a philosophical flick throughout. But I like the way they did it because in that movie, I think a lot of people would have said, man, go with it, Truman. You have a nice wife that treats you real well. She's always happy, never gets mad. You got nice neighbors. Everybody lives in little houses and stuff like that. You got a job. You got three meals a day. Just go with it. But Truman, though, is this hero that represents, how you doing? Represents all mankind. He's got the courage to recognize, wait a minute, if this is not the real world, I want out. Okay? And so, by the way, so you got, there's a sense where the movie is anti-Christ because Christoph, Ed Harris, is this evil guy that's kind of forced Truman into this box and is just kind of cramping down on human creativity and from us finding our own truth. But there's another sense where Truman is a type of Christ. Because when he finally gets away, he's got this fear of water, but he kind of drowns. It's almost like he's dead and he comes back to life, death and resurrection. And then eventually he walks up the steps, it's like an ascension. Okay? And then gets into the throne room of Christoph. Okay? And so I thought it was a postmodern flick. And I was telling guys it's a postmodern flick. This guy, you know, create your own narrative. Don't fall for, you know. And but I was corrected on that by, I think it was with, I think it was Pastor James Hansen out of the Bellevue area. He said, no, who's with him? He's not going on any journey with a community. He's leaving a community. So, what was the guy, the actor's name, Jim Carrey?
Jim Carrey.
Oh, yeah.
He's going through this all on his own. This is an existential flick. Okay? If he was going from one community to another community, and neither community's narrative or story was true, but he just chooses to align himself with another community, you might be able to say, okay, that's a postmodern flick. But that was more of an existential flick, so it's kind of the last stage in modernism where you still have the individual, but now he's a non-rational individual, just the individual and his will. But then that eventually gives rise to postmodernism. Look, if God is dead, man is dead too. And this is the reason why now we don't even know who we are. Well, if God is dead, then life goes on. No, if God is dead, we've got to redefine who we are. And so now all of a sudden we don't know which bathrooms to use. Did I tell you guys already about the Portland State University panel discussion, right? And it just, all one of the lady professors said was, look, it's a fact. There's biological differences between males and females. Males generally have heavier bone structure, heavier muscle mass, and about one-fourth of the crowd stood up and walked out in protest. And then the male professor, who might not have even agreed with her, said, you can't do this. You cannot be educated if you simply walk out every time somebody disagrees with you. We have to listen to opposing viewpoints. And the end of the YouTube video footage, this was real footage. This wasn't like an actors and all, but it was a gal, probably 5'6 to 5'8 in height, but probably only weighed 100 pounds. You know, I don't know if she was a vegan or what, but I mean, she was not healthy, okay? And there was an African American security guard. The guy had to be between 6'6" and 6'8", probably 320 pounds, all good weight. And he had security on, you know, the back of his blue jacket, and he's just trying to calm her down, being very, very gentle to her. So this lady's telling him, basically, there's no difference between me and you. No difference physically or whatever. And he's being gentle because he has to be gentle. Yeah, that guy's going to prison if he hurts this particular frail lady, you know? There's exceptions. There's some female athletes that could probably, at this point in my life, probably take me out in 20 seconds. But those are the exceptions rather than the rule. But that's just, when you've got his dead man is dead too, we don't even know who we are anymore. And so now we just gather around a narrative. Postmodernists do not believe their narrative, whether it's the gay community, the civil rights community, the feminist community. They don't believe their narrative is true. They've given up on truth. So just, we want this story, this narrative to be true. So if you disagree with us, we're not going to debate you. We're going to shout you down. We're going to throw rocks. Okay? So, you know, when I give a talk like this, I always, you know, the only thing worse than being a slave and knowing you're a slave is being a slave and still thinking you're free. Okay? So please, when you turn on the television set and Cal Berkeley, which is supposed to be, you know, the free speech zone, the free speech capital of the United States of America, all of a sudden liberalism has morphed from, you know, it's like, we want the freedom to say things that might offend you and that go against traditional values. We want that freedom. That was the 1960s. Now that they've gotten a big enough following, now we will not allow anybody to speak here or disagrees with us. And so when we watch television, please understand the philosophical shift, the worldview shift that has occurred, so that at least as we lose our freedom, you know, if we become enslaved, at least know that politically speaking, we're slaves. Now, the thing is that we can still experience true freedom being slaves to Christ. But it's one of those deals. Most young people, as long as you don't mess with this, with social media, they can care less what's going on the outside. So we need to pray for them. We've dealt them a horrible deck of cards, and then we've got them all caught up in this stuff to where, you know, I think my grandson was going through a really difficult time. And he went to his best friend for advice. And I said, what did your best friend say? He said, because they're both gamers, you know. He said, he told him, it is what it is. And you got your problems, I got mine. And so they just played video games. Now, that didn't scare me. What scared me was my grandson thought that was good advice. Yeah. Okay, so I'm not going to hug you. I'm not going to say, don't worry, man, I'm there for you. I'm not going to say, you can count on me. I never abandon my friends. He's going to say, it is what it is. And you got your problems, I got mine. Come on, let's play another video game. Okay, and you know, but now you want to conquer a culture, you got to divide and conquer. So we got a strategy, and you got to really take out the males, because the males are more likely to fight than the females. And so we got a strategy to take out inner city black males. We got a strategy to take out white males. And it's horrible. It's like the welfare system, socialism, destroying the black inner city family to where we have a lot of young black males growing up in homes without a dad. More likely to go to prison than to college. And then with white males and the government-run schools, you could just keep blaming all the world's problems on them. You're the reason for all the problems in the world. So what does the guy do? He just says, well, I'm just going to go on this. Because out here, everybody hates me. And so I'll just go on this. That's why the white nationalists, the racists, are on the rise. Because some of these guys are going online and saying, wow, somebody's standing up for me. Yeah, they're racist guys. Stay away from them. And but all this is, you know, what are those who call evil good and good evil? Isaiah 5:20. We're there. You know? The homosexual. Those are the good, that's the lifestyle that you can really look up to, those courageous homosexuals. And CNN wants you to think that homosexuals are being slaughtered all over the world. And in reality, other than unborn babies, it's Christians that are the most likely person to be killed for their faith on planet Earth. And the postmodernists love, just like the communists before them did, the oppressors versus the oppressed. As long as you get to define who the oppressors are and who the oppressed are, you're always going to win that battle. Okay? So, you know, I would be surprised if less than 10% of Americans are actually true believers. You know, when you start questioning, probably 40% say they're Christians, you start questioning their beliefs. It's like, this guy's a New Ager. This guy is just a hedonist, just loves seeking pleasure, whatever. So, but the oppressors, we're not in charge. We're the ones who get booted. You know, you don't bake a cake for a gay wedding, you're a Christian, you lose your business. You don't photograph a gay wedding, you don't provide flowers for a gay wedding, you lose your business. But when you turn it around, Bill Jack out of Colorado sued gay bakers for refusing to bake a cake for a heterosexual wedding with a Bible verse on it that said nothing to do with sin. And he lost the case because the court ruled you cannot force people to do their private business against their convictions. Well, yes, you can if they're Christians. And by the way, has anybody taken a Muslim baker to court yet? It's not going to happen. So whatever the case, just see where we are here. Get the bigger picture, okay? So when you watch movies like Truman, what's the message there? The guy's an existentialist because he's taken his leap all along, okay? Postmodernism, there is no individual. You're part of the community. By the way, what Dietrich von Hildebrand, the brilliant Roman Catholic philosopher from Germany that opposed Hitler, he said, whenever you attempt, and he said it's both about fascism and socialism, which eventually you'd get a postmodern blend of it like we have today. But he said, whenever you try to build community in a godless system, you get collectivism, where the individuals are only important collectively. So Joseph Stalin could slaughter a whole town because I am the law. I know what's best for my people. I have political opponents in that village. I'll wipe them all out. Okay? By the way, we've got some political leaders that think that way. And it's only a matter of time to debate about whether some of them have actually acted that way already. But it's only a matter of time before that starts coming down. And but true community has to be a system that acknowledges the true God and man created in his image. And that's where you get individual rights from. And so true community is only found in Christianity. Everything else is collectivism, where the individual is only, the value of the individual is only based on how much value they have to the collective whole. And even Jordan Peterson, the non-Christian psychologist that is opposed out of University of Toronto, that's opposed to all this political correctness, even he recognizes, tells the new atheist, before you trash Christianity, let me know what your alternative is. Because the Judeo-Christian scriptures, even though this guy believes it's nothing but mythology, and he's wrong on that, but he's saying, hey, from that mythology comes human wisdom that gave us the basis for individual rights, the value of the individual, human rights and freedoms. So before you trash Christianity, you better come up with a better alternative, because otherwise your ideas are sounding too much like the gulags of the Soviet Union or the concentration camps of Nazi Germany. And so just keep this, the bigger picture, in mind. So now we move from the Christian worldview, which then gave us confidence in human reason as a gift from God, created in His image. Just keep in mind, if human reason evolved randomly through non-rational causes, then how much confidence should we have in you? I mean, Richard Dawkins has so much confidence in human reason, he should have zero confidence in human reason. I mean, how much time, space, and matter, and chance before all of a sudden we went from a single-celled animal and we attained to self-consciousness? You know, what do you got, Richard Dawkins, what do you got? So, a magic wand or something? But with the Christian worldview, it was like, okay, now we can trust human reason because we were created in God's image. But we took a beautiful gift from God and forgot about the gift giver. Got too big for our britches, and that led to deism. So that's what we're going to talk about tonight. And so now, to take, man, I'm dropping everything. This room was built on the curvature of the earth. But, so if you open your books, now if you have the Inerrant Fifth Edition, it's on page 47, so I don't know what page number it is on the earlier.
On the nearly expired version, it's 46.
46. He's on page... It starts on 46?
Well,
so that means he wrote a new edition. He only gave us one extra page of information. It was probably the eighth of his seven tests for a worldview. And then,
but mine says it's the updated and expanded edition.
There you go. Well, it turn to page 43 of Sire's The Universe Next Door. And do you have a... Or actually, go to the earlier chapter. Around page 22 or 23, the seven basic questions, does he add an eighth question there? Because if he doesn't, that might be the big difference. Does he just have seven basic questions?
Yeah, those questions aren't on this page in particular.
Okay.
Maybe in chapter one.
Be in the first chapter.
So there we go. So we got, yeah, just seven
there,
questions.
He doesn't add an eighth one.
No. What is the meaning of human history is his last question.
Yeah. The eighth one that he adds, but he still calls it seven basic questions. But the eighth one is, what personal life-orienting core commitments are consistent with this worldview? Basically, what difference does it make in your life and stuff like that? So so if you go to the chapter on deism, he calls it the clockwork universe. Why does he call it the clockwork universe? Okay, and by the way, the deist, even though William Paley's watchmaker argument for God, teleological argument, the argument from design, that if you find a watch in the wilderness, you don't must have a watchmaker. Even though that he was a traditional Christian arguing for traditional Christianity, and his argument was popular, deists embraced that argument. But they took it further than Paley would, that the whole universe is a clock made by God, and if God has to tinker with that watch, tinker with that clock and perform a miracle, then that must show some insufficiency in God. And so all of a sudden the deists are ignoring the fall of mankind and making more of the laws of nature than they actually are. So they're beginning to view the entire universe like a machine or like a clock. And if you need the Maytag repairman, then the Maytag washer or dryer wasn't perfect to begin with. That's the way they're looking at miracles. So they're acting like they're figuring out this perfect universe, and our reason will eventually give us all the answers. And so all of a sudden, they're looking at the universe like a machine that man can totally figure out. And so worldview question number one. So if you go to that chapter on deism, which is probably chapter 3 in your edition 2, and just go to worldview number 1, worldview question number 1. He doesn't always number the worldview question with the right one. All I'm going to do is go through these worldview questions with you and then try to explain what Sire's saying, because this, you know, this dude's a brilliant guy. But he says, worldview question number 1, the answer to it is that a transcendent God, because what is the prime reality? What is the ultimately real thing? A transcendent God, a God who transcends us, as a first cause, created the universe, but then left it to run on its own. God is thus not immanent. He's not involved with the world. He's the faraway God. He just made this clock or this machine and then just let it work on its own. And it's not gonna, it's gonna do fine without him. Doesn't need him, because that would be an imperfection in God if the world still needed him in the way they think, which is totally incorrect. But God is thus not immanent, not triune, so God is not fully personal. I don't like that terminology there, because most deists would be okay with a personal God, in other words, a God who is a person, but what he means by non-personal is more like the Islamic God is actually a personal God. Allah is not an it. Allah is a he, a personal God. But Allah is a personal God. The God of Islam is a God, a personal God that doesn't want to have a personal relationship with you. So the Muslim's relationship with God is totally based on fear. Forget about having a love. You know, Muslims don't get together in their mosque and sing, you know, and he walks with me and he talks with me and he says that I am his own. It's like they get on their faces. It's just totally based on fear. Well, with the deists, it's not really based on fear, but it's kind of based on apathy. It's just like God just left us on our own, and he really doesn't have a personal relationship with us. Religion is really just all about morality, what is right and what is wrong. And there might be life after death, then again, there might not be. Thomas Jefferson went most of his life believing there was no life after death. And then John Adams, who was a traditional Christian, convinced him, and later I read their religious letters back and forth, and led him to believe that, yeah, maybe there is life after death and judgment and rewards, but it doesn't look like Jefferson ever embraced Jesus as God or the doctrine of the Trinity. So God is thus not immanent, not triune, not personal, not fully personal in the sense of wanting to have a personal relationship with us, not sovereign over human affairs, not providential. So God doesn't providentially look over the affairs of men. That's a little bit too strong, because, you know, he even quotes from Frederick Copleston, the Jesuit priest, a brilliant Christian theist, who wrote the 9-volume set, A History of Philosophy, and that, you know, the page before this, that deism historically is not really a school of thought. And so it's kind of like a number of related views, but not all held every doctrine in common. Okay? And so you have some deists who believe in life after death. By the way, the American deist, and Copleton points this out in a footnote in his, might not even be a footnote, but it'd be in the text, on the difference between American deism and French Jacobin deism. French Jacobin deism was anti-Christian deism. Once they, you know, won the revolution, then you bulldoze the churches and you guillotine the clergy. Okay? Whereas, and you know, you promote immorality and you hate the church. But the American deists, for the most part, like Jefferson and Franklin, they would pray to God. So even though they didn't believe God could perform miracles and supersede the laws of nature, they believed he could work within the laws of nature and still give them the victory over Great Britain. So it's worthwhile to pray. Christians aren't ignoramuses, they're just not as enlightened as the deists. And the sexual freedom that the deists can experience, most, they would create a lot of disorder. You know, in other words, Jefferson and Franklin believed they could mess around with somebody's wife and be smart enough to get away with it. Know when to do it, when not to do it. The average guy can't figure that out. So it's good that we have Christians, real Christian churches throughout America. That helps us keep order in society. If you think God might strike you dead if you step out of his will, you're more likely to obey the laws than if you think God has kind of distanced himself from the world. So, but we deists, we're enlightened enough to, we understand that there's, we can go beyond traditional boundaries and still live a civilized life. But for the regular common man, yeah, Christianity is an ally. And so they would promote Christianity and the printing of Bibles. Congress would vote to print Bibles and things of that sort. And they would start congressional meetings with prayer. And so the idea that God's not sovereign over human affairs and not providential, even that, you know, many of the founding fathers saw the, was it the War of 1812, I think, where Great Britain was going to take over Washington, D.C., and then a horrible storm just came through and just put an end to that. And many of our founding fathers saw that as divine intervention, yet no natural law was broken. By the way, this is something that even the leading Christian apologists in America today, I think we need to note this, and hardly anybody notes this. We act like a miracle equals either a violation, we would say no, it's superseding, of natural laws. Miracle is a superseding, at least a superseding, a transcending of natural laws or a violation of natural laws. Is that a good biblical, that's a good philosophical definition. We say, okay, for purposes of argumentation, we'll define miracles like the deists do. But I think we Christians need to be careful about defining miracles like that. Can you think of any miracles in the Bible? Well, the Bible calls it a sign or a wonder, where no laws of nature were superseded. Now, when a dead body rises, it is superseding the natural laws, because energy deterioration has won when you're dead, and your body's supposed to just decay. It's not supposed to come back to life. When Jesus ascends to heaven, bodies aren't supposed to start floating up in the air, okay? So you got a superseding of natural laws with a lot of miracles.
I'd say Jonah.
When Jonah gets swallowed by a fish, it's a sign, the sign of Jonah. It's recorded as a miraculous event. But the only thing miraculous about it is the timing. There's a, you know, a horrible storm. Well, just coincidentally, when Jonah is trying to go 2,000 miles out of God's will, God says, go to Nineveh. He says, no, I'm going to go to Tarshish, 2,000 miles in the other direction. So it just happens to coincidentally be a storm. Then they draw straws to find out whose fault it is, and it comes out to Jonah. There's no superseding the natural laws there. And they said, well, you must have ticked off your God. Who's your God? And he said, well, he's the God who created the heavens and the earth, the God of Israel. Now they're terrified. He's like, oh no, this isn't a local deity. This is God with a big G. They said, well, how will he stop being angry? How will he stop this storm? Well, you got to throw me overboard. It's like, Jonah, what are you telling him this stuff for me? Yeah, now you pick the time to be honest, you know, but then they're like, no, we don't want it because we ticked your God off, and now we're not going to throw one of his prophets overboard. He's like, hey, look, guys, it's not going to hold it against you. It's my fault. So they throw him overboard. Well, is it a miracle that he was swallowed by a large fish? No, human beings have been swallowed by whale sharks in the Mediterranean Sea before. So it just happened to be one there. And then when they get stuff caught in there, and you could, by the way, you could survive for days inside. There's enough air, stomach acid bleaches you completely white, and you get. And there were guys in sideshows that had survived. But when they get something caught in their system that's disagreed, I mean, you know, something doesn't settle right, you get acid reflux or you get nausea. Imagine being a whale shark with a human who's still alive, you know. It's probably saying, man, I need some light in here. Let me see if I can start a fire. So then you get agita or whatever. But they're known to swim to the shore for some reason and vomit whatever's bothering them on the shore. So then there's, now Jonah's probably bleached white. Probably all his hair is gone from his body. Makes him a much more persuasive prophet. But no natural law was violated in the whole process. So sometimes it's a thing of timing. I think this is a true story, that a lady's baby was crawling on the train tracks and a train was coming. I think it was a true story. I'm not sure. I don't remember if they said it was a true story, just gave it as an illustration. But she cried out, she couldn't get to the baby in time, and cried out to God to stop the train, and the train stopped several feet from the baby. And then it turned out the conductor had no idea there was a baby on the track, but a few miles back, he realized something was wrong. And so he stopped it, which still took, the momentum still carried it. Now, no natural law was violated or superseded, but that's still a miracle. So keep in mind, it's kind of like the word life. Life is arbitrarily defined by scientists as, and this is already simplistic, but as something that takes in energy from the outside and uses that energy to thrive. Okay? I mean, if you didn't get energy from the outside, second law of thermodynamics would just kick in and crush you. But you're able to take energy in from the outside and survive and thrive. So plants are plant life. But in the Bible, there's no death before the fall, yet Adam and Eve are eating plants. And the Bible would define life as something that has a soul, that has consciousness of its existence and its surroundings. So the biblical definition of life is different than the scientific, but they're just arbitrary. It's the same with philosophy. We need to keep in mind, when we debate on a philosophical level, the theist would call that storm, the War of 1812, that prevented Great Britain from retaking Washington, D.C., the theist would call that a miracle. The deist, if they call it as a miracle, called it a miracle, that's only a metaphor. There are no miracles. So you just got to understand that God can perform miracles. I mean, if there's no fish on one side of the boat, and Jesus says, put your net on the other side, and then you get a big catch of fish, technically, where fish hang out is not really an issue of the superseding of natural laws. But, so certain times, it's the timing that a command is given and something happens. And so we just need to keep in mind that the biblical definition of miracle is wider than the philosophical definition. So we'll work with this, a violation or superseding of natural laws, but sometimes the miraculous aspect is just the timing of it all. Okay? And now if somebody cuts your ear off and Jesus puts it back on, that's a superseding of natural laws. You multiply the bread and the fish, that's a superseding of natural laws. But if Jesus says, yeah, you know, we're sons of the king, do the sons really have to pay taxes? No, the servants pay taxes. But we'll pay taxes anyway. Go catch a fish. The first fish you catch is going to be a coin in his mouth. Fish swallowing the coin isn't superseding the natural laws. And a guy happening to catch a fish that has a coin in his mouth is not a superseding of natural laws. But the fact that it follows Jesus telling Peter, catch a fish, the first fish you catch is going to have a coin in it, pay our taxes with that, that's a miracle. But it's not a superseding of natural laws. So just keep in mind, we're going to, as we deal with theists here, we're going to use the philosophical definition, which is a more narrow definition of what a miracle is. So again, you got this transcendent, separate God who's above the creation, who is the first cause. See, the thing is, do we theists believe God is the first cause? Yes. But we also believe he's the sustaining cause. That not only did God cause the beginning of the universe's existence, but it's by his will that the universe, and us included, continue to exist. These guys, if God just got the ball rolling, and then it's all on its own. Okay? So he just kind of makes a machine, and then just leaves it alone. The machine just functions on its own. But he created the universe and left it to run on its own. So God is not immanent. He's not involved with the universe. He's not sustaining us in existence. He's not intervening with miracles. He doesn't care a whole lot about having a personal relationship with us. It's just about, you know, so man has a relationship with God's laws. We don't have a relationship, and they believe, the deists believe you can find God's laws through human reason. Whereas the American deists or pro-Christian deists, they believe the highest level of human wisdom when it came to morality and how to run government, they believe that, well, that's found in the Bible. The Jacobin deists of France, they couldn't burn enough Bibles. Gideon's would not be real. If Gideon's ran for office out there with the French Jacobins, it wouldn't do too well. Okay, worldview question number two. The cosmos, the world God created, is determined because it is created as a uniformity of cause and effect in a closed system. No miracle is possible. Okay, so again, it's a uniformity of cause and effect. What that means is that all natural effects are caused by natural causes. There are no supernatural causes. It's a closed system. There's nobody on the outside acting inside our world. Now, they're not atheists. They believe there's a God outside the world, but the God is not concerned enough to intervene in our world. So the God just kind of ignores. It's an apathetic God, okay? So no miracle is possible. Worldview question number three. Human beings, though personal, are part of the clockwork of the universe. Okay? So the deist is still trying to hold on to the personality of man, but it's starting to get difficult to do that because now you're a bolt or a screw or a spring, and you're just part of a bigger machine. But they're still trying to hold on to human beings being personal. But, you kind of wonder, are they just living on borrowed capital from the Christian worldview? Because does theism really, can you just define the universe as just a machine or a clock and say, well, we're little parts of that bigger machine, but we're more important than that bigger machine because we're personal. The rest of the machine isn't. Well, yeah, you could say that these little dots on planet Earth are persons of tremendous value if you've got the theistic God. But the theistic God, it kind of begs the question. Worldview question number four. Human beings may or may not have a life beyond their physical existence. And so you had a lot of deists that, you know, this world is all there is. And then some deists say, no, it's going to be judgment and reward. words. Worldview question number 5. Through our innate and autonomous human reason, innate, we were created with this reason, and autonomous, we don't have to, we can govern ourselves, we don't have to learn from revelation from God. So you have the unbiased individual using his human reason alone, and through our innate and autonomous human reason and the methods of science, we can not only know the universe, but we can infer at least something of what God is like. The cosmos, this world, is understood to be in its normal state. It is not fallen or abnormal. So, again, it's like a perfect. If it's a perfect God, he created a perfect clock. Will we Christians disagree with that? I mean, if you want to just use a clock for a metaphor for the world, we say, well, yeah, God did create a perfect clock. He created a perfect universe. But then we fell. Well, these guys are denying that fall. If they're going to accept the fall, they're going to accept God talking with Adam and Eve and Satan speaking through a snake. That's like, whoa, whoa, whoa. Human reason's not going to go there. We don't believe those old ancient myths. So the world's not abnormal. It's in a normal state. It's not fallen. But these guys have a natural theology from nature. We can figure out what God is like. And so you still have many deists that are able to argue for something that looks a lot like the theist God. The theistic God, it's just that he doesn't perform miracles. Okay? And isn't really concerned about having a relationship with mankind. Worldview question number 6. Ethics is intuitive or limited to general revelation because the universe is normal. It reveals what is right. Ethics is intuitive. In other words, deep down inside, our conscience tells us what is right and what is wrong. If somebody's getting it wrong, it's just because they're an idiot. Okay? If they were as smart as Thomas Jefferson, they'd figure it out and get it right. So it's intuitive. Or it's limited to general revelation. General revelation is called general because it's revealed to all mankind, even people who haven't read the Bible. So it's also called natural revelation. It's what God reveals to us through nature. Now, Romans 1, Paul says that God reveals, the invisible God reveals his existence to us and his power through what is seen, the world that he has made. Okay? In Romans 2, 14 and 15, deep down inside, we have God's laws written on our hearts. Okay? And so there is natural revelation. But God started writing a book, actually 66 books, because we became experts at perverting general or natural revelation. So God gave us, the Christian says, God gave us special revelation, also known as supernatural revelation. Well, obviously, the deist is going to reject that because he doesn't believe in supernatural. You know, he doesn't believe in miracles. So special revelation, God revealed himself, God the Son became a man. They say, no, Jesus was just a wise teacher. Jesus of Nazareth was not God. Thomas Jefferson did not believe Jesus was God. It amazes me how a lot of patriotic Christians, though I would agree with them on their patriotism, but they try to argue Thomas Jefferson into heaven because he spoke so highly of Jesus and because he was so pro-Christian in a lot of ways and because he prayed. But him and Ben Franklin did not believe God became a man. In fact, in their warped way of thinking, that would show an inadequacy in God. That would show a failure in God. He made a perfect clock, but then it fell apart, and so he had to come, the watchmaker had to come back to the planet to fix what was broken. And again, they're denying the fall, okay? And So these guys here, the deists, are saying that we know ethics by our intuition, by our conscience, and ethics is limited to general revelation because the universe is normal. So that means the world is exactly the way it was created to be, and our minds work exactly the way they were supposed to work. So if we just are smart enough and study the world, we can figure out from looking at nature, we can figure out what reason everything had. But by the way, Thomas Aquinas was really big on natural law. The founding fathers were big on natural law. But that doesn't mean you have to jump way in the, over in the camp of these guys and start denying divine revelation in the scriptures, okay? As supernatural revelation. Aquinas, like Aristotle before him, would look at physical things in nature moving towards the same goals over and over again and say, hey, this shows that this was formed or created for that purpose. So Thomas Aquinas would look at natural law and the design of the human body and say, you can prove that homosexuality is a perversion of God's creation and is unnatural without even opening up the Bible. Because people are using their bodies and their sexual organs in ways they're not supposed to be used, and they're damaging each other's bodies. That is not the purpose. That is not the natural purpose. That's not what the natural law tells us. So this isn't all garbage. In other words, they're taking some good from theism and then blowing it way out of proportion, and they're saying, I only want one slice of theism. The rest of it we could throw out because we're much smarter, you know, than these Christians and don't believe in these old myths. So the universe is normal. It's not fallen. It reveals to us what is right. Worldview question number 7. History is linear. So again, history has a purpose. It's going somewhere. For the course of the cosmos was determined at creation. Still, the meaning of the events of history remains to be understood by the application of human reason to the data unearthed and made available to historians. Okay? It's kind of like they see history as making sense, but that doesn't mean that they're looking for, through human history, the drama of human history, what the Bible would be declared to be the unfolding, the revealing, the unveiling of the kingdom of God on earth. You know, so in other words, you know, human history, we call it history. It's his story. It's God in action in the world. There's a purpose. We're going somewhere. There's going to be a final judgment. Well, some deists would deny the final judgment, but they still would say that history makes sense and it's a worthwhile thing to study. I think that's kind of at odds. It seems to me that theism is moving towards atheism, whether it wants to or not. If God's just leaving us alone, if this is not a fallen world, then human history is just a big, cruel joke. If Jesus of Nazareth didn't rise from the dead and conquer death for us, then human history is one big, cruel joke. And then worldview, question number 8. Cold deists use their own autonomous reason to determine their goal in life. Warm deists may reflect on their commitment to a somewhat personal God and determine their goal in accordance with what they believe their God would be pleased with. So a cold deist here is using in the context of kind of those Jacobin deists who, God left us alone, God doesn't care about us, we don't need to care about him. We'll just find what's right or what's wrong because we're that brilliant. Okay? And Rousseau the French, now he may have been an atheist, or I think he portrayed himself as a deist, but it's kind of debatable where exactly he fits there. But he would basically view Christian morality as artificially putting boundaries around human sexuality and limiting it to the relationship between a husband and his wife. And that we need to get beyond that and free ourselves from this moral bondage. And so he'd be a cold deist if he was a deist. Cold deists use their own autonomous reason to determine their goal in life. Warm deists may reflect on their commitment to a somewhat personal God. So here's where it gets to that, okay, well, God created the universe and left it alone, but he still does care enough about us, and we want to do what pleases him. And a warm deist is probably going to believe in life after death and things of that sort, okay? So that's Sire, for the most part. He gets into scientific deism, and which was pretty much a big factor. It was the using our human reason, starting modern science. Then we got so much confidence about, you know, the Newtonian physics. Everything just moved like a clock. And here Newton was a professing Christian, but eventually it was like, man, we're going to eventually figure this whole universe out. We don't need revelation from God. Just what Pascal said about Descartes. If human reason can find all truth, solve all our problems, what need is there for revelation from God? And what we're going to do now is take a 10-minute break, and then after that, we're going to look at the arguments against miracles from Benedict Spinoza and David Hume. It amazes me how many Christian apologists misrepresent Hume on this. Although Hume did make some statements where he sounded like Spinoza, but when he argued his case against miracles, it was pretty clear that he was coming at it from a different standpoint. So we'll see two different guys, one a pantheist, one a deist, how they arrived at this.